Hey, everybody, this is Jeremy Miller, Commercial Director for Smart Home Solutions, and we are continuing our transformation podcast. And I have Eli Aguilera with us today. Eli, you want to go ahead and introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Eli. Pleasure to meet you guys all virtually. I am the Senior Vice President of Merchandising at Total Wine & More, but I've had a lot of different experiences prior to this. Was a Walmart store manager in Texas, in a supercenter in Texas, in my early parts of my career, and then was a marketer at Procter & Gamble and at Anheuser-Busch. Did a few Super Bowl commercials when I was at Anheuser-Busch. The puppy commercial and the veteran coming home and the parade were two of my three commercials. Had a lot of fun doing that. Decided to stick in the alcohol beverage business and have been with Total Wine & More now for 6 years. I'm the head buyer, spirits, beer, and more in concierge sales. We are the nation's largest seller of spirits in the United States, as well as the nation's largest independent alcohol beverage retailer. Right under $5 billion in sales annually and over 200 stores.
It's fun to have a different industry a representative like yourself on here, right? You know, obviously at appliances, we're very focused on white goods and working with our builders. But, you know, when we think about your segment, something that a lot of us, you know, engage with, spirits, beer, wine, you know, these are products that we enjoy every day.
Especially during the COVID time.
Yeah. I was going to say, I'm curious how your sales are. You know, when I reached out to you, you know, the spirit of this, right, was to try to talk to other folks like yourself, other leaders in various industries, and talk about transformation. And I know that's kind of like a buzzword. It's been around for decades. What I want to kind of know is, it's kind of, you know, what does it mean to you, right? What's beyond the buzzword?
Yeah, I think there's a few things. And one of them is I learned this from my IT partners, and in the IT world, they do a lot of work under what is called agile. Agile is basically saying we're going to make a change, but we're not going to get it perfect from the get-go, because if we try to get it perfect, it's going to take us forever. And by the time we get it out there, it's already going to be old. Agile is iterate as you go and improve and improve over time and keep yourself relevant to the consumer, because the consumer is shifting just as fast as the innovation is. And so transformation is agile. That's the way that I think about it. Working in a way that is going to cause significant improvement over time, but with small iterations that end up becoming revolutionary as we go into business cycles. We have a lot of examples of that in my business, but agile is a good way of thinking of the innovation cycle from a transformative perspective.
Yeah, we talked about this yesterday with Gurmeet Lamba, who's the VP of Engineering at Petrobotics, and obviously as an engineer, you know, agile is a very common tool for them. You know, how does somebody in the business context apply agile? You know, and obviously to hear you talk about this notion of iteration to get to big change, right? And I guess my follow-up question to that is, you know, how do you get buy-in from other stakeholders to kind of embrace this notion of, you know, incrementality can actually equal, you know, step change, or can equal some really big outcome, either for a project or your business?
Yeah, I think the first time that you try to get someone to think in this way is the hardest. And I remember when I first heard this term being shared to me, I was thinking to myself, so that means that we're just going to be lazy and we're not going to get the things done. you're not going to ask for all of the input. And you're not going to get it the way that I need it to happen. But once I saw the benefits of this process inside of our digital space, inside of our web space, inside of our stores, I started to see the value in it. And so I think it is that first jump in that is the hardest. And I wasn't bought into it. I wasn't bought into Agile when our digital organization presented this. But now I see the value in it. And I'm going to give you one example of how we applied Agile in a non-technology way. And that is curbside pickup inside of our stores. So on the pandemic, on the week of the pandemic, we saw a dramatic rise in our digital business to the point that we had to shut down our digital website for about 2 days while we were able to hold up the infrastructure and have enough bandwidth to hold it up. Wow. But we also recognized that consumers were shopping in a different way, and that we had had this curbside pickup idea in our back pocket, but weren't planning on doing anything until 2021 or beyond. What we decided to do was let's launch curbside pickup as quickly as possible. And this is one of the proudest moments inside of our company, because we launched curbside pickup in 2 weeks and had it up and running inside of our stores. When we first launched it, though, and you guys aren't going to be able to see this visual, but I'll pull it up for you, Jeremy, so you can see what I'm talking about. We ended up launching it, and we asked our store managers, go get Home Depot buckets, get a bunch of sand, and laminate this screenshot and put it out in the parking lot. That's going to be our curbside pickup area inside of our stores. From that, about 3 months later, we operationalized this. We ended up getting the marketing right. We got some signs up and we got a formal piece to put in the parking lots that looked a little bit more advanced. And now we've gotten to the point that our technology has caught up also with what our dream was. At the beginning, it was text the store and the store will go and pick up the product. Now there's functionality inside of the app that we have that allows you to do that. But this was an agile way of doing things. We knew that we needed to get something out quickly and move as fast as we could. What ended up happening is when we launched the curbside pickup in over 180 stores in that first week, which was 2 weeks after the pandemic, it turned out that that became our number one digital sales platform overnight. And that was a transformative moment for our company. I believe that we are taking significant share in the industry because of that one moment. We decided not going to be perfect. Home Depot bucket and sand is good enough, but let's move and let's get it into the stores and try to make it as easy as possible for the consumer. We're not going to get it right. We're going to have some people that are upset. We're going to have some customers that aren't going to be the happiest, but let's try this out and let's see how it works. Got it out, did well, continued to iterate. And now we are on the third evolution of that and know that we're already working on iteration 4 and 5, future state of how we're going to do curbside pickup.
Yeah, that's a really cool example. I wish people could see what you're showing me. What comes to mind when I see something like that is, first, through that process, right, you were able to iterate and learn, right? If you thought about if you went straight to what you achieved in that third phase, that probably required significant investment, right? You're talking about maybe onboarding new vendors, whatever the case might be, right? But you learned first.
Yep.
You didn't have to make that investment and find out this isn't going to be a thing for us, right?
Yeah. If you think about now, the app has location monitoring. And so we know when a customer is within a half a mile of the store and we can get it to the customer once they say that they're in the parking lot within 6 minutes. And so the speed of what we're doing now is great. We weren't at that at the very beginning. We weren't able to execute at that speed early in this process. But now our speed is so much faster and the customer is rewarding us with their dollars.
That's fantastic. I love examples where you set out with a vision, you implement something that creates benefit for the customer, and then you find out because of whatever you did, there was even greater benefit that was uncovered just because you did it and tried it. I want to go back to one other thing you mentioned, which was this was on your roadmap, though. It was something that you were thinking about.
Yeah.
But the COVID crisis accelerated your need to execute this program. You talked about Agile, but I have to imagine there was also some discussion about priorities. What was that like when you were starting to think about, you got to accelerate some things, you got to change some things? How did you prioritize, you know, these programs? How did you know which ones, you know, you thought you should focus on?
We were having a war room mentality in the early days of COVID, where a few of the executives were getting together and prioritizing where we were going to shift the business, how we were going to stay open, how we were going to be relevant in each market. But more so, how are we going to make the investments in order to keep our infrastructure up? Because we saw that by shifting our business from in-store piece to the digital area, we knew that there was going to be a massive change. I'll give you some examples. There were a few stores where our overnight in-store pickup program from a digital had 100 to 150 orders per day. And it sounds like not that much, but when you go from 15 to 150 orders, the operational challenges that that presents inside of the store, the operational challenges that presents for the digital platform, the operational challenges that that presents for everything that we're doing from a business perspective was readily apparent. And so we saw that there were issues that were occurring across the supply chain and across the consumer touch points. And we were attacking every single one of them with investments. And we immediately decided that the digital platform was going to be an area where we were going to invest significantly. We've almost doubled our digital team. We also ended up deprioritizing other parts of the organization. So there were parts of the organization that were like events. So we had our events group that put together tastings inside of stores, put together classes inside of our stores. That events team immediately shifted over to the digital organization to help out the digital organization. So we had to have reorganization at speed. And it took that collaboration between all of our organizational leaders to make that happen. It wasn't happenstance, but it definitely was intentional. We were intentional in those early days and decided where we were going to make big investments and big bets.
And I think that's a nice kind of capstone to something you said earlier about Agile when you first thought, you know, Agile kind of being lazy, but obviously it's not, right? It still requires strategic thinking. It still requires, you know, tough decision making. It still requires prioritization, but it's really just another way to operate to help you get to a business benefit more quickly. You know, I started thinking about, like, you know, the digital experience you were talking about. And, you know, since we have this opportunity to talk to somebody like yourself, is the store still relevant for you? You know, or is it relevant plus maybe some new things, right? What does that look like for you guys?
Yeah. So we already jumped into the experiential retailing space well before a lot of retailers decided to jump into this space of experiential in order to drive footsteps. Our stores already had tastings. They had Meet the Maker events. We had classes where we were teaching people about wine regions. We had classes teaching people about mixology. We had a lot of fun happening inside of our stores. The minutes that COVID hit, that fun inside of the store shifted to operational excellence, social distancing, minimizing the amount of displays in the stores, ensuring that we had protocols in place to keep our team members and our customers safe. All of those were things that occurred. Now we are shifting again as we fast forward. We have this digital space. It's omnichannel. We want to make sure that the digital space also represents what lives inside of the store. We can't do the tastings in the digital space, but we can do other things in order to inspire consumers. But as we transform over time, we're always going to have to iterate and think, what are ways that we can bring that event-like atmosphere and that experiential retailing to experiential digital and make our digital properties as experiential as possible. The in-store environment, though, is never going to be put in the back burner because the in-store environment is still an environment that's going to be important for our customers. That's where they explore. Our number one segment inside of our business is what is called the Authentic Explorer. It's an individual who's coming in and exploring different products, trying to find different wines, taste them. And so we still think that exploration in the store is just as good as the digital property, but inside of the store, it's more experiential in nature. And so we're going to continue to invest in our stores. We're actually right now, because of COVID, going to remodel 50 out of our 200 stores to be prepared for when we have to do our re-grand opening and bring consumers back into the fold. We've also recruited a lot of customers through the digital platform who have never shopped in our stores. But eventually, because of that recruitment strategy that we've implemented, we're going to be able to bring them into the stores where they can have the true Total Wine experience.
That's really cool. Like, I hadn't even thought about this notion that because of the changes in our lives that you would acquire all these new customers because of the digital side of things. So it's really fantastic and great to hear. I think you're right. I mean, I think your segment especially, you know, I happen to work for an Authentic Explorer. And, you know, I see their passion, right? You know, they do. They get excited about going in and seeing what you have. You gave me a great example of a successful program that you participated in and drove. But what's maybe another example where you tried something or maybe you saw something where you thought like, you know what, that was a good shot, but it just kind of fell flat on its face.
Yeah, I think investments in organizations and when you think that having special focus will reap the rewards. Let me give you an example from my days at Anheuser-Busch. At Anheuser-Busch, we were having some significant challenges where Budweiser and Bud Light brands were declining fairly significantly. And we saw the craft momentum happening. And so with craft growing at significant rates, I was part of a group that made a recommendation to establish a high-end business unit and separate the core sales organization into multiple sales organizations. There would be a high-end unit that would be exclusively selling our craft and import products, and another group that would be focused on the core products. It made sense intellectually that you separate these groups. But when it actually happened, that separation caused reverberations inside of the organization and with our wholesaler network. And the wholesalers definitely had a challenge with this. And so getting as many stakeholders involved was probably the biggest lesson there, where we thought from a company perspective it made sense, but then involving the wholesaler network would have been critically important. To equate it to the way that GE operates, you guys work with home builders and also with retailers. Sometimes you think an idea is good for a retailer, but you're not thinking about the home builder at the same time. And having that dialogue across the board and getting the key stakeholders involved will help net out with a better solution. So that's probably my best example of a time where we thought at a gut level we were going to be successful, but we weren't.
You know, I think one area I kind of want to touch on, especially since you're a business leader, how do you evaluate technology, especially if it's, you know, it's going to be new to your business or it's going to require that, you know, maybe you take somewhat of a leap?
It depends is always the answer on something like this. And so let me give you an example of a technology that I have a lot of passion and excitement for, but we haven't jumped in because the kinks are still being worked out in it. And that's virtual reality. Virtual reality is a territory that I am super, super excited about. Why am I excited about? I can imagine a world one day where digitally you can go into our store and shop our store virtually using virtual goggles, get in, pick up a bottle, once you pick up that bottle, you can learn more about that bottle and maybe even be transported to Tuscany and learn about the wine from the winemaker, be transported to Scotland and learn about the whiskey from the master distiller, and actually see the terroir, see the vineyards, see the landscape, and just have this total experience. That gets me really excited. The dream of the future gets me excited, but the kinks right now, as well as the fact that the technology hasn't advanced as quickly, means that we would have to make a massive investment to make that reality happen. But we know that that reality is going to be here one day. So we're taking incremental steps towards that, but not taking the giant leap, because the giant leap would be too far. But just think about that reality, and let it soak in a little bit. That's the type of reality that I think could happen 5, 6, 7 years from now.
And if you think about that timeline, 6, 7 years, you know, it's a blip, right? And so I think what I hear you saying as well is that you're not ignoring it until year 6 or 7. You're still participating. You're still getting involved a little bit, testing things or whatever the case might be, in preparation, right? You know, Gurmeet yesterday was talking about, you don't want to be in the situation where you have to flip a switch.
Correct. Yeah, we have our suppliers already working on virtual reality capabilities. That way, when we launch something like that, we can be ready. Let me give you an example. During our grand openings, if you come to our grand openings, you will have a virtual reality experience with some Scottish distillers already. And you can experience Scotland inside of our stores during our grand openings. I'd like to be able to do that every day, though, and figure out a way of making that a reality inside of people's homes. And that's just a matter of time.
God, that sounds amazing, to be honest, especially right now. I want to pivot to, you know, we talked about, you know, things that you're keeping your eye on in the next 2 or 3 years. And you brought up CRISPR. And I got super excited because, you know, we had worked on some CRISPR research at my previous company. I actually included it in a white paper because, you know, I just see this as a big transformational technology that it's not just, you know, going to be transformational from a technology standpoint, right? It is going to have socioeconomic change all over the place. So I would love to hear, you know, why you're excited about CRISPR and, you know, what you're looking at there.
Yeah. So I will stay away from the medical side because the medical side, there's so much I think that is potential there. But I'm going to talk to you about it from my perspective in our business, the alcohol beverage business. Where does wine come from? It comes from grapes. And what is happening right now? Our ecosystem, climate change, all of those things are impacting us pretty dramatically. And so CRISPR theoretically will allow for grapes to be grown in harsher climates with less water and have benefits of higher quality. All of those things can happen in the future. And so CRISPR from a alcohol beverage wine perspective, I think will change the way that we are making wine and the quality of wine. I've been talking with a lot of different distillers, winemakers, just learning about the challenges that are being posed right now by the climate change that's occurring inside of our world. And if you think about it, the traditional climates that were growing wine are now being inundated with too hot of temperatures or not enough rain. And traditional wine regions are now moving further north. So I've heard of winemakers in England and Germany producing high quality wines where before those high quality wines were produced in France and Italy. France and Italy are still producing incredible wines, but climate change is dramatically changing that. CRISPR has the ability of continuing to deliver phenomenal grapes and vineyards, but in a way that is sustainable and has less impact on our environment. And so I think CRISPR is a really exciting one just from a farming practices perspective.
To your point, because of this notion that you can now grow agricultural products in new environments, especially ones that are harsh or considered unmanageable, you know, if you're a builder, now there's land out there that today is virtually unusable that will become very precious very quickly because CRISPR will enable those tracts of land to actually be farmable. Yeah, I'm with you. I think CRISPR really does have, you know, a lot of tremendous upside.
Yeah, CRISPR is the reason why they are going as quickly as they are with the vaccine trials right now for COVID. They got at the NIH the gene sequence for COVID and were able to translate that into a vaccine and get it over to Moderna super quickly. But if you think about it across the board, anything that has a gene sequence to it could be changed. And so when we think about futuristic thinking, but imagine a world where you can create a tree that sucks in of the bad stuff in the ozone and delivers more oxygen and pulls out more carbon dioxide. Those are the kinds of things that could happen in the future.
If you haven't checked out CRISPR and you're one of those people that wants to kind of, you know, learn about something interesting, it's CRISPR. Eli, thank you so much. This was really cool. You know, if we keep doing this podcast, I'd love to have you back, talk some more about what's going on. And obviously, if you haven't checked out Total Wines or you want to try out the new curbside pickup, definitely check it out.
Make sure that you keep drinking interestingly and come on over to Total Wine and More to experience interesting drinks. Right now, because people are traveling or visiting far off places, you can still visit those places with great whiskeys, wines, and beers from all over the world.
So I guess before we go, what is Eli drinking at home?
I am drinking a lot of high-end tequila. Mm. Tequila is trending right now, but it's got it's a keto-friendly product, and it tastes phenomenal. So tequila and wine, that's what Eli is drinking on a weekend basis.
All right. Well, then you heard it there. Tequila, keto-friendly, no excuses.
Okay. Thanks, Jeremy.
Thank you.